As we say, welcome to Dr. Sam Jones from my local vet. Good morning.
Good morning, Sally.
Now, you normally come in after 11, but you double booked us today.
I did indeed, yes. I've got an 80th birthday to go to, so, you know, I'm all dressed up.
Yes, he's dressed up, and I've known Sam for many years, and I've never seen him actually dressed up like this. It's actually a little bit disconcerting. If you have a question for Sam Jones this morning about your pet, you know, sometimes it can be very expensive to take your pet to the vet, and if you would like some free advice before you take that next step, now is a great time to call 1300 222 612, or you can text 0467 922 612. But as we were talking about with Harry just then, it's been hot.
Mm.
And the little animals aren't coping that well.
Yeah.
Well, that's what just my four really spoiled chooks. They right. are not coping.
Yeah, certainly. We've seen a lot of birds come in. I mean, it's spring, right? So a lot of these smaller birds are battered around by the weather, and especially, you know, with the increased heat, it can knock them around. And also you've got to take precautions taking your dog for a walk, especially in the peak of summer. You know, they do find it difficult to keep cool if you've got a dog that's either overweight or a dog with a pushed-in face. Especially those dogs, really, you need to be walking them, you know, before the sun comes up or after the sun goes down, as a minimum. And there might be even nights where it's just too hot. You know, I've had to I had to pop Digby in a taxi once because we got halfway through a walk. I thought he'd be fine. He did have a really thick coat. You know, Digby's coat was really thick. For those of you who don't know, he was a 40-kilo Labrador, but and he wasn't that overweight at all. He's just a big dog. But yeah, his thick coat just meant that taking him for a walk on a hot day was too much for him. So
yeah.
you've got to be careful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is stuff that you're obviously a vet and didn't think it was going to happen.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
It's insidious. It catches you out. You know, you sort of think, well, it is warm, but we're not going to go for a run. And I mean, you know, surely you would survive in the wild. But I guess, you know, dogs would just typically lie under a tree on a really hot day, wouldn't they? They wouldn't be electing to go for a walk. So you just, you've got to be really mindful of it, especially in Queensland. It's different if you're in Tassie, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is okay because, you know, having a Labrador or those higher energy dogs will require two walks a day. It is okay on a hot day to go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's risk assessment, you know, risk benefit analysis. And sometimes you can do stuff at home. You know, I remember when Digby, he had a couple of surgeries on his hind legs and he was a young dog at the time. And, you know, he was full of beans. And I thought, oh God, what am I going to do for 6 weeks whilst you recover from this operation? Well, I lay him on his back, you know, and I had my one leg, I'd be sitting down with one leg either side of him, and I'd throw the ball up into the air and he'd just sort of catch it lying on his back. And that's all we could do. So sometimes, you know, you can still have some fun, at least some stimulation in air conditioning, you know, so that's a safe way of having fun.
You're on 612 ABC Brisbane and ABC Queensland this morning, 14 past 10, and Dr. Sam Jones is here to take your questions about your pet. It's always good to get some free vet advice because it can, all those bills can add up, Sam.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, with free vet advice, you get what you pay for, right, Sam?
That's true. General vet advice. You can text as well, 0467 922 612, but we'd love to hear your voices. Here's a text. Hello to the vet. I was just wondering how you would go about making two female cats, one very young and one elderly, get along. The older one seems to chase and attack the younger one any chance she gets. Thanks.
Such a good question. I bet you there's hundreds of listeners out there thinking, oh, wow, I'd love to know the answer to this. Mm. There's a few things we need to kind of think about first, and that is that, you know, cats are hardwired to be primarily solitary animals, right? And they're territorial. So introducing another cat into a cat's environment is always going to pose somewhat of a challenge to the cat that was there first. Now, some cats are just naturally more social than others, but that sort of gives you a bit of insight into generally how they sort of exist. Now, in this situation where you've got, you know, the older cat chasing the younger one around, and I'm just assuming that, you know, the younger one was introduced second. We want to ensure that they're not competing for resources. That's a really important aspect of managing the situation. Now, by resources, I'm referring to food and water. So food bowl, water bowl, scratching post, kitty litter. They're the sort of four big ones and sort of like resting areas, right? So ideally, you would set up, obviously, with the older cat, she's been there for longer. You would leave her resources where they are, and then you're trying to find a separate area where you could have the kittens, you know, resources. And ideally, you'd have a set of resources for each cat plus an extra. Okay, that's a lot of gear.
And especially if you're in a small space, that's three kitty litters is a lot.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, a small space may not be ideal for two cats. That's the other thing, right? Because they need to be able to retreat away from each other. So if we've got the older cat chasing the younger cat, we do need to create a space or a structure where that little cat can jump up somewhere high where only she can fit and the older cat can't get to her. So they need to be able to retreat. I guess if the younger cat is smaller, you could like do a little cubby or something like that as well. But they like to be up high. That makes them feel confident and secure. So that's the main thing. Ensure that, you know, they've got adequate resources. They're not competing for resources. Now, the other thing that's a really good option to do straight away is pheromones, because we know from clinical studies that they do relax cats and ease that tension. You know, you have a chat to your vet about that. They'll be able to organise or at least recommend a pheromone for you. And you can put diffusers, you know, know those little diffusers. You can plug them into the wall. You'll probably need several throughout the house. But that will hopefully go a long way to just trying to reduce the stress and anxiety that will be going on, the tension in the household.
All right. Hopefully that is helpful to you, mystery texter. Put your name on it if you're going to text in, because would you like to know who these are from? 1300 222 612 if you would like some vet advice from Dr. Sam Jones from my local vet. Charisse is on the Gold Coast. You're driving to the vet right now.
Yes, I am.
Oh, goodness me. What's happened?
Well, a few things. I think she could be getting sick from an agave plant that she brought into the house. She's only 5 months old.
And this is a dog?
And she brought it in and she just started chewing the top of it the other day before we caught her, you know, and took it off her. But since then, she hasn't been able to keep any food down. So I tried a bit of bland chicken last night, because I dropped into the vet yesterday afternoon, and they said try giving a bland chicken, which I did try, and an hour later she threw that up. Her stools had been solid up until this morning when she ended up having a very runny poo at puppy school. Yes.
Okay. That's an interesting one. I mean, young dogs will always, you know,
eat anything.
It's just their exploratory behaviour, trying eating new things. And I've never dealt with an agave toxicity before. In fact, I don't even know what the plant is. But just a quick Google search, obviously, it indicates here that it is
they're
toxic
everywhere
to dogs.
It is toxic.
Well, I've never seen one. That's Google, so you've got to be a bit careful. if you're going straight to the vet, that's great. You do want to take vomiting, diarrhea very seriously, particularly in young dogs. Often, you know, it can be all sorts of things. It can be ingestion of a toxic plant or material. They can eat something that will block their gastrointestinal tract. And even if it's just like a simple gastritis or, you know, gastroenteritis, they can dehydrate very quickly. If they're losing fluid, you know, if they can't drink and keep fluid down and they've got diarrhea and they're losing fluid through their rectum, right, then you've got a recipe for disaster, because the next thing you know, they're going to become dehydrated. Then they're going to become seriously unwell. So it's great that you're going straight to the vet. One resource I use all the time for these sorts of cases is there is actually an animal poisons toxin helpline. It's a hotline. You do have to pay for it. I think it's about $80 or something like that. And I believe it's open to the public. Often I'll call that helpline to get really specific information about, likelihood of toxicity, best practice in terms of decontamination. That basically means trying to get rid of the toxin. At the very least, it's good that she's going to be assessed. They'll check her hydration status, her pulse, have a good listen to, you know, check all the vitals, and then probably start her on IV fluids and try to give her some activated charcoal or something like that
I was just going to say, she's her normal self. She's running around playing.
Oh, that's encouraging.
Even though,
Well, that is very encouraging. I always, when we have the dogs that are, you know, behaviourally unwell, when they're lethargic and listless, with vomiting and diarrhea, well, we always are a bit more concerned about those than we are than the dogs that are just like, look, I'm happy as Larry, but I just, you know, can't keep any food down. You're absolutely doing the right thing by getting her assessed.
Good on you, Charisse, and perhaps you'll be digging out that agave.
Well, this is the other thing. You just mentioned about toxic, this place that you can ring up, or because we've got so many plants, and having a puppy, even though I've fenced off the garden, there's different plants, and I was wondering, do I have to take a piece of each one into, say, a nursery to find out what is deadly and what is likely just to make them sick, you know, because I don't know the names of every plant that I have in the garden.
Charisse, do you know that if you have a phone... an iPhone, they actually have a plant identification on them. Do you have a teenager in your life?
No, I do have a Samsung, and I'm pretty sure you can do the same with that.
So you can actually just point it at that. Yeah. We do it all the time. And point it at the plant, and it will tell you what it is. So that's a good start. Hey, Charisse, good luck with your puppy. I do need to move on to Roxy, who is in Billawheeler this morning with some digging dogs. Roxy, I don't think you're alone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. We were in a bigger place, but we've had to move to a smaller property, and we've got the two dogs we'd like to keep, but they continually dig the holes. We'll fill them in and go out, and they'll be dug again.
I actually went through this myself.
That's why your dog was called Digby, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't, actually. No, Jane just had naming rights.
Okay.
But anyway, this is a pretty common thing. And so I did a bit of research when Digby started digging up the backyard. And there can be lots of different things that can kind of, cause the dog to want to dig. And sometimes it's just those young dogs that just, you know, are exploring their environment. But other times there can be something very subtle that you'll never know about, like a leaking pipe or sewage or something like that. They're picking up a scent and they want to, but it sounds like these guys are digging up all sorts of things around the backyard, you know, in different areas. And one of the ways that, well, the way that I addressed this was to set a little trap, because the problem is that if you, you know, catch the dogs digging and you run out in the backyard, you say, cut that out, and they stop. Well, then they'll just do it when you're not around, right? It doesn't actually help the situation. And oftentimes they'll be digging because they're bored, right? They'll only do it when you're not around because there's nothing else to do, you know. All the clothes have been ripped off the line. They've ripped those to shreds. And now there's just nothing left to do but dig. And so I guess that can be part of the solution, is just creating stuff for them to do whilst you're away. You know, some people will take a big ice cream container, put some sardines in the water, freeze that, and then leave that out, and they'll scratch at that and play with that during the day. You can buy these really cool, like, environmental enrichment toys, such as a Kong, where you put kibble into the cavity and they have to knock it around with their nose and spill out the treats or whatever. Or there's even this one you can tie, if you've got like a balcony or something, you can tie it to the balcony, and it's like elastic, and it kind of hangs down, and they kind of jump up and knock it, and then it springs backwards and forwards. So that's just the stimulation side of things. But what I did with Digby was I got water balloons, that kids use and throw at each other. And I just put some cayenne pepper in the water balloon, but with no water, blew it up with air, tied a knot, buried it where in the holes he was digging. And then when he dug, this little thing would explode in his face. And he didn't like that at all. Mm. And so he stopped digging straight away, because all of a sudden there was this adverse sort of experience, you know, that was associated with digging, directly associated with digging.
Okay.
But it had nothing to do with me, as far as he was concerned.
Cayenne pepper.
Well, that's just what I used. Yeah, that won't cause any harm, and he certainly won't, the dogs won't like it, because it's noxious. So, you could give that a go.
Oh, that's some good ideas.
Yeah. Good on you, Roxy.
Very much.
Hope that helps.
We can keep them. Yeah, thank you very much. Have a good day.
You're on 612 ABC Brisbane and ABC Queensland this morning, 25 past 10. Dr. Sam Jones is here from My Local Vet, and he is giving you some vet advice this morning. If you have a question, 1-300-222-612. Julie's just texting going, Sally and Sam, the dog's digging up skeletal remains. Oh, Julie, I think you've made that very dark. I don't think that was
what. Where is that one?
Julie, that's, come on.
We need to talk to Julie. What sort of skeletal remains are they?
And another Julie's texted in, hold on a second, let's go to Sally in West End, because she just dropped off and now she's back. What was your question this morning, Sally?
Oh, I just went to the vet last week, and I've got a Maltese Shih Tzu, and they told me not to give her any raw food.
Mm.
Now, I had another Shih Tzu for 16 years, which I fed a raw mince alternatively with cooked chicken and vegetables?
Yeah. It's a really, really good question, Sally. You know, is it okay to feed raw meat to our dogs? And I guess the fact that your previous dog lived to 16, we can't say that that was because of the raw meat. You know, she might have lived to 16 anyway. But I'll tell you what I do know about the risks that we now know associated with feeding raw food, raw meat. That is. The two main considerations are that raw meat. By its very nature, will have some bacterial contamination. It's inevitable, yes. Right? Which is why we cook our meat. In actual fact, when we were doing, food safety at vet school, they were adamant that when we're cooking hamburgers, especially cooking hamburgers, you need to make sure that you cook them very thoroughly all the way through, because it's a comminuted meat, meaning ground up, and the surface area is greater, and therefore greater tendency to grow bacteria, which is funny because I think in America they don't really cook their burgers all the way through. I don't know.
I don't know what's going on over there. There's a lot of weird stuff happening.
That's the least of their worries.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so the thing is that there is a bacterial risk with feeding raw meat. And so we're talking about bacteria like Salmonella and Campylobacter. They're the two big ones that we think of. Now, the other consideration would be parasites. There are some parasites that will exist in raw meat, depending on like where you get it from. And so that's why we recommend cooking it as well. And then the third aspect is, I know I said there's only two, there's actually three. The third one is that meat in and of itself will not be a complete and balanced diet, right? So the premium dry or wet pet foods that are now available in Australia will all be independently tested by the American Association of Food Control Officials, and we know that they're complete and balanced. And those two words mean, the complete means part means it's got all the nutrients that dog requires for that life stage, whether it be puppy, you know, middle-aged, elderly, whatever.
Yeah, and what's the name of that?
Well, there's lots of different brands, but what you need to do is have a look on the packet. If you look on the packet, it'll say AAFCO, trialed and tested to be complete and balanced, and AAFCO stands for the American Association of Food Control Officials. They are a third party, so they're completely independent, and they do trials involving hundreds of dogs to ascertain the quality of these diets. And so the balance part means that those nutrients are in the right proportion. So that's what you need.
Good on you, Sally. Oh, hello. Okay,
thank you.
Someone's just arrived at Sally's place. She's got to go. She's got visitors.
That sounds like kids.
Very quickly, I know you need to go because you've got an ADF Sam. Which auntie is it? Auntie?
It's one of Jane's aunties.
Yeah,
you've got me on the spot
okay,
there.
Sorry about that. Sorry if she's listening. I'm don't think she is. I just need to get this text from Russell at Mount Jukes, who texted in very early. My dog constantly scratches and has bald spots everywhere. I've tried every product known to man and nothing works. He's been to vets and one even gave him a chew and said he'll be right. Didn't work. Charge $400. Please help.
Okay. Well, it's a very common frustration for people when they have itchy dogs and they've tried everything, shampoos, conditioners, some people try vinegar. In actual fact, I had a client that did use vinegar. It worked very well on the skin, presumably because it changed the pH. But there is actually a algorithm that we follow as vets. Well, I guess not all vets follow it, and potentially that's how you ended up in a situation where you were given a chew and said, you'll be right, and didn't resolve. But there is a systematic approach to identifying the cause of itchiness in an itchy dog. And that approach is pretty detailed, but essentially what we want to do is identify, okay, first and foremost, are there any parasites involved, such as fleas or mites? If there are, let's manage that. Is there any primary or secondary bacterial or fungal infection? If so, we need to identify and treat that. And is there any allergy? And certainly in Queensland, in my experience, that is by far and away the most common cause of this sort of behaviour, where they're scratching and itching and giving themselves bald spots, right? Now, the important thing to note is that there's plenty of dogs that have allergy, and they, by the way, they can have allergy to food. And I think that food allergy is, you know, in the general public, they think it's quite common. In actual fact, it's not nearly as common as either contact allergy, that is to grasses and things that they're paws are coming and their chest is coming in contact with, typically grasses and plants, or allergy called A to B, which is environmental allergy, pollens, dust mites, those sorts of things, sort of things that cause hay fever, right, in humans, which you can't really stop your dog coming in contact with. And then there's flea allergy. We don't really see flea allergy too much anymore just because the products that treat fleas are very effective. So the point is that you can have any one of these, a dog can have any one of these allergies. They can actually have multiple allergies. You can have a dog with food allergy and A to B. And then they can develop a secondary bacterial or fungal infection. So there's a lot of possibilities here. There is a systematic approach to ruling out these things. Mm. And therefore you need to go to a vet that is going to follow that systematic approach to get you the diagnosis, and then you know how to treat that most specifically.
Russell, I hope that has helped this morning.
I hope
it's
so,
a lot of information.
It's a lot of information, but it's a big topic.
Yeah. Dr. Sam Jones from My Local Vet, thank you so much for coming in again. And we'll see you, I reckon, maybe once before the end of the year in six weeks' time or so.
That sounds good.
And have a great time at the 80th.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.